Welcome to Whiskey Cast, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 118 for November 11th, 2007. Coming up in a few minutes.
You know, you can think about all the different scotch whiskeys, the single malt scotches that have come along, the small batch bourbons that have come along, but nothing has come on the Canadian side with regards to handcrafted whiskeys.
That's John Hall, one of the more creative distillers around. John's Kittling Ridge Distillery produces 40 Creek Canadian whiskey, and he makes his whiskey the hard way. We'll hear how he does it in a few minutes, but first, let's look at the news. More new whiskeys to talk about this week, including another pricey Macallan. The second edition of Macallan's Six Pillars series will be released in January. It's a 55-year-old sherry cask-aged single malt, and like the first edition, it comes in a handmade Lalique crystal decanter. Just 420 bottles available worldwide at $12,000 each. Just about as rare, but much less expensive, the latest edition of Glengoyne's series of whiskies chosen by the guys who work at the distillery. The first six bottles were selected by the Glengoyne Stillman and Mashman. This year's casks were selected by distillery manager Robbie Hughes and warehouseman Billy Edmiston and Deke Morrison. Glengoyne brand heritage manager Stuart Hendry says they have a tough act to follow.
Well, these are the 7th, 8th, and 9th single casks have been chosen by our production team, and they will end with these ones. We started with three Stillmans, we've done our three Mashmans, and now we've done the last remaining three chaps in our warehouse team of nine. So this is the kind of end of the series, if you like. A lot of pressure on the three guys. The first six between them have picked up quite a few awards. And within the distillery, there's, shall we say, a healthy rivalry to see whether the three chaps, and in particular distillery manager, can pick up as many awards as the Stillman and Mashman have done. So there's quite a lot of kind of good fun ribbing within the distillery about, you know, how many awards they're going to win and things like that. Robbie chose a very unique cask to Glengoyne in that it's a small port cask. It's not a big 650-litre port pipe. It's a small hogshead-sized 250-litre ruby port cask, and it's got just wonderful sort of luscious pinkness to it, and great depth and great body, and some interesting sort of notes that aren't normally in Glengoyne. So it is something that not only is different, but something that won't be able to bring out again for about another 15 years or more, because the port casks that we've got now in the warehouse are like 2-3 years old. So worth trying just from the sheer novelty value, but the actual contents really, really stand up very well. And in fact, there was a bit of an argument in-house as to who was going to get to release that one. And Robbie, being the distillery manager, did win. So there was more than one of them wanting to pick and release that rather special cask, and Robbie won the battle there. Deke, who's our head warehouseman, has chosen something that's quite young and quite fresh and very, very typical of the majority of the casks in our warehouse are refill casks with lighter colours and lighter flavours running through the dram, if you like, and very much allowing the Glengoyne house style of spirit to still shine through without too much sort of cask influence. So his is fresh, quite vibrant, tastes of green apples, I think from memory when I tried it. And there's a bit of oak, a bit of vanilla in there, but not really too much. And it's very much still reminiscent of the whiskey that came from the stills. Billy has gone for the other main type of cask that we have, which is first fill sherry cask, and his is wonderful for me, aromas of raisins and dried fruits, a little bit of a sort of toffee edge from memory in it, but typical of a heavily sherried Glengoyne cask. And when we're producing our core range, for example, our Glengoyne 17-year-old that's well known around the world, it's a mixture, if you like, of the sort of cask that Billy chose, with the first fill sherry influence coming from the European oak wood, and also the Deeks cask, which is more a cask that's been filled two or three times before with Glengoyne. So these are our typical casks, which we normally combine in a bottling of, say, for example, 17-year-old refill and first fill. And then Robbie's chosen just something that's quite peculiar in our case, port, which is, you know, virtually unique in our warehouse system. So they're all worth trying for different reasons. They're also entirely different price ranges. Robbie's will be almost four times the cost of Deek's Choice, for example. So there's kind of very much something there. Everyone from a financial point of view, but more importantly for me, from a sort of palate point of view, a good range of flavours going on, and all of them very, very unique.
When will these be out in the stores?
It was launched over here in the UK just this week at Whisky Live in Glasgow. We don't even have them on the shelf at the distillery yet.
Meanwhile, Highland Park is releasing a new 21-year-old single malt, but you'll have to do some traveling to get it, even if you do live in Scotland. Highland Park controller Jason Craig says it's destined exclusively for the duty-free market.
Key connoisseurs and people who really appreciate single malt spend a lot of time traveling as well. And to go through travel retail, it's great to see your standard products that you can buy in the domestic markets at a slight discount. But more and more people are looking for different products, slightly differentiated products, slightly different strengths or different ages. So in the last couple of years, we've released 16-year-old as an exclusive into travel retail. That came out, I think, late 2005. And we've just released 21-year-old into travel retail. And that will go predominantly into DFS, which is North America, and into Asia, and into Western Europe, and obviously the UK. But as a market, travel retail has been growing tremendously for us over the last 4 or 5 years. And for us, it would be silly not to take the kind of 15% year-on-year growth we're getting in there. I think we're the second fastest growing single malt in there behind Macallan, which is one of our sister brands. And if there's demand, then we have supply, so we should be supplying different products, which is where the 21-year-old comes in.
And what's different about the 21-year-old in terms of taste?
Well, in terms of taste, you know, our 18-year-old is, you know, as Paul Packard said, is the best spirit in the world. We get gold medals for our entire range, 12 through to 30-year-old. But for 21, the main point of difference for duty-free is most products in duty-free tend to go for a lower alcohol by volume level, or ABV, but we've gone for 47.5% on our 21-year-old, which is quite a bit higher. It's 4.5% higher than our 18-year-old. In terms of profile, it's probably around 80% refill, 20% first fill. So you're kind of looking at a slightly lighter style product than the 18, but stronger. The smoke will probably be slightly more pronounced for consumers when they're tasting it, but it really does give this complexity of Highland Park. It's suitably different from our 18 and 25. It's not like a slightly grown-up version of our 18. It is a very differentiated product. It's more akin to our 16-year-old. It's almost 12-year-old grows into 18, grows into 25, 16 grows into 21, grows into 30. That's the kind of approach we've taken. So we have great hopes for our 21-year-old. We launched it at Cannes in France, which is a massive travel retail fair over in Europe. And Jerry Tosh, our global brand ambassador, who's now become our head of brand education, was doing masterclasses at Whisky Live in Glasgow with probably over 100-150 consumers who'd never tasted 21 before. And he put it in as the mystery Highland Park. And everybody really, really liked it and did see the distinct difference between our 18 and our 25 and our 21. So it does bode well for the future.
And as far as the future goes, what's the word on the 40?
Well, the word on the 40 is on December the 28th this year, we have several 40-year-old casks or 39-year-old casks that they are just now will turn 40. They've been earmarked for a permanent 40-year-old for Highland Park, and we expect that to be available for shipping out to our various markets, including North America, who've expressed a great deal of interest, so Canada for that matter. And we reckon it will probably be over to your side of the world probably April, May, June into key retailers in North America. But it's a lovely product, and myself and Jerry Kosh have spent a lot of time with Russell Anderson, our whiskey distillery manager, and Max McFarlane, our whiskey maker, and perfecting this, taking various versions and various cask makeups to see what fits together suitably for what will be a killer product for Highland Park.
By the way, this past week's storms on the North Sea battered the Highland Park Distillery on Orkney, but there was no damage. The roof replacement done this past summer came just in time. Earlier this fall, I mentioned Bacardi's plans to invest $250 million in its Scotch whiskey facilities. The first step is complete now. Bacardi closed this past week on 106 acres of land outside of Glasgow that will be developed as a maturation and blending facility for Dewars. Construction will start early next year, and while the first phase will open in 2009, the project will need 10 years to complete. Now, if you've ever wanted a job in the whiskey business, pay attention. The Balvenie is taking applications for two U.S. brand ambassadors. One will be based in New York and one in California, and they'll represent the Balvenie at whiskey festivals and other events. They're full-time jobs, and that means, yes, you can get paid to drink whiskey. I've posted a link to the online application at the WhiskeyCast website, and on the next episode, I'll talk with a couple of brand ambassadors about what their jobs are like and how they got them. Meanwhile, Compass Box's new round of whiskeys are out. The Canto single cask range of 16 different whiskeys is working its way to 16 different locations around the world. The U.S. version will be available exclusively through Park Avenue Liquors in New York and went on sale just in the last few days. While I haven't tasted it yet, I'm hoping it lives up to my favorite Compass Box expression of all time. John Glazer produced the Magic Cask Malt exclusively for sale in Ontario last year.
Magic Cask was the only time I've ever used a whiskey that was aged in a former wine cask. It was a beautiful Madeira barrique. I bought a couple of them and did some experiments with them and used it for that whiskey. And it's a beautiful whiskey, and we were quite fortunate that it turned out so, but the Compass Box style is really built on ex-bourbon cask-aged whiskeys, or using the use of virgin oak, as in Flaming Heart. Some of the Oak Cross whiskey gets some new oak. And things like Canto Cask, which we've just released here through Park Avenue.
And the Canto ones I know you're really proud of, as we talked about earlier.
Yeah, they're very cool. That's something that no one has done anything like this in Scotch whiskey. You know, using the quality of oak that we're using here, this French oak that we've used, and experimenting with different levels of toast, you know, on that oak, and the effects that has on the resultant whiskey. So, as you may recall, the Canto Cask series, 16 cask strength bottlings around the world, one for the U.S. through Park Avenue, they were all the same malt whiskey, but for the last 18 months of their lives, they each were in one of five different oak toast combinations, so variations on a theme. And that's where the name Canto comes from, because Canto is a division of a long poem, and I thought that was an appropriate name for such an idea.
What are you working on these days?
Doing a lot of work experimenting with grain whiskies, both young and old grain whiskies. Maturation in whiskey, because it takes so much time, you know, different than wine, for example, is basically a lifelong, career-long endeavor. So I've still got lots of trials going and lots of things going with oak maturation. Primarily French oak, some American oak, but all new. So lots of that sort of thing. And I will say one day, I can't be pinned down for a date, but I do. And we one day intend to bring back Orangery, our infused whiskey, one fine day, but don't have that date yet.
Any progress on a new second edition or a third edition of Spice Tree?
I'll tease you and say yes, some progress, but that's about all I can say at the moment.
Of course, the Spice Tree is the malt that got Compass Box in trouble with the Scotch Whiskey Association because John Glazer used new toasted French oak planks mounted inside the barrels during maturation. The SWA argued that wasn't acceptable under traditional industry practices. Coming up on the calendar of events, we're starting to wind down the schedule a bit as the holidays get closer. This coming week is the Hopscotch Festival in Vancouver, British Columbia, followed by the Inter-Whiskey Festival in Frankfurt, Germany, November 23rd through the 25th. The annual Whiskey Ship Festival will be in Zurich from November 29th through December 1st. If you heard the last episode focusing on Maker's Mark Bourbon, the distillery will be offering its annual holiday candlelight distillery tours on the first two Saturdays in December, the 1st and the 8th in Loretto, Kentucky. And the 8th will also be auction night in New York as Christie's holds an auction of rare whiskeys, spirits, and wines. For more details on that, you may want to go to the WhiskeyCast website and listen to episode number 113 from October, when we got a preview from Justin Christoph of Christie's Wine Department. Of course, the address is www.whiskeycast.com. The shores of Canada's Lake Ontario, between Niagara Falls and Hamilton, are dotted with wineries. Driving along the QEW Highway bound for Toronto a couple of weeks ago, I saw wineries at almost every off-ramp. But there's only one distillery. Okay, it's a winery, too. John Hull's Kittling Ridge Distillery and Winery is celebrating its 15th anniversary this year. John is regarded as one of the best innovators in the business. He received last year's Malt Advocate Award as Pioneer of the Year. His 40 Creek Canadian whiskey is like no other Canadian whiskey, or for that matter, whiskey from any other part of the world.
I got into the distilling business in 1992 because I opened up my own winery and distillery. And the small distillery that I purchased, came the distilling license. And I was very intrigued as far as whiskey making was concerned, because I'd been making wine for so many years, and I really needed another canvas to paint on. And I thought making a handcrafted Canadian whiskey would satisfy that creative thirst.
And you went about a method that's completely foreign to everybody else in the whiskey business.
That's correct. When I studied how whiskey was being made around the world, one thing that was common was what they call a mash bill. And a mash bill simply is a recipe card where it tells you to add so many pounds of rye, so many pounds of barley, so many pounds of corn, and I just couldn't understand that type of making of whiskey, because if I made wine that way, I'd be out of business, because as a winemaker, you're taught to try and bring out the best flavor characteristics of each grape variety. So that's the way I approach my whiskey making. That is to do the rye separate from the barley and the barley separate from the corn and bring out that spiciness and fruitiness in the rye. Bring out the nuttiness out of the barley, and the corn, which I think is a very important ingredient, I wanted to do it separate to bring out that roundness and that heavy body weight that corn whiskey will bring to a whiskey.
And unlike a lot of distillers that would mix them all together in the same cask, you actually age them all separately as well, right?
That's correct. I copper pot distill them separately. I age the rye whiskey in a light toasted American white oak barrel. I age the barley in medium toast. And I age the corn in heavy char. And then they're aged right up to 10 years. Anywhere, the youngest whiskeys are 6, the oldest is 10. And I taste every single barrel, because no two barrels are ever going to taste the same. So I taste each barrel and select it. And indeed, you know, a lot of people think the older the whiskey is, the better it is. And it's not true, because I can tell you, from tasting my barrels, I've got some 6-year-olds that taste like 8-year-olds. And indeed, I get some 8-year-olds that taste like 6-year-olds. So I think each barrel has to be tasted and selected for the blend. So when I do that and I bring the rye whiskeys, the corn whiskeys, and the malted barley whiskeys back together, I bring it together as a blend, and I call that my Meritage whiskey. That's my Bordeaux blend, being a winemaker. And back in 92, I heard that the Scotch guys were using sherry casks to round off their whiskeys. Well, being an independent whiskey maker, I couldn't afford to go to Spain to buy sherry barrels, but as a winemaker, I knew how to make sherry. So in 92, I made sherry in brand new American white oak barrels, aged it to 2002, and then I dumped the sherry. Now I had my sherry cask. So then I take my Meritage blend of whiskey, and I put it into sherry casks for about 5 to 6 months.
What does that do to the overall finish or the overall taste of the whiskey?
What it does is, I mean, the Meritage tastes great, but what the sherry cask brings to it is a little bit more color, just a little bit more sweetness because it's an Oloroso sherry barrel that I'm using. But it also brings some additional nuttiness to the whiskey.
This seems like a lot of work for a small distillery. Why do you go through all this to make just one type of whiskey?
It is a tremendous amount of work, but really it goes back to what my objective was, and that was to make a truly handcrafted Canadian whiskey. I can't think of any handcrafted Canadian whiskeys. And the whiskey that I wanted to make, I wanted it to be handcrafted as a Canadian whiskey. You know, you can think about all the different Scotch whiskeys, the single malt Scotches that have come along, the small batch bourbons that have come along, but nothing has come on the Canadian side with regards to handcrafted whiskeys. I didn't want to emulate a Scotch whiskey. I didn't want to emulate a bourbon. I wanted to really, truly make a handcrafted Canadian whiskey. And I guess it takes a lot of work to do that.
And you've gotten a lot of recognition for it, too.
It has come. The recognition has been just delightful. I've received the Pioneer of the Year award from Malt Advocate magazine. Most recently, Distiller of the Year from Whiskey magazine. And the icon of whiskey as the Whiskey Ambassador of the Year from Whiskey Magazine. And certainly a lot of gold medals, double gold medals in San Francisco whiskey competitions. So it's nice that the whiskey has been, that all that hard work has been recognized. Because I can just imagine what some of the, you know, the famous Scotch whiskeys like Johnny Walker, Jack Daniel's in bourbon, what they went through, the original Johnny Walker, the original Jack Daniel's, what they must have gone through. And their passion had to be there, and that's what's in 40 Creek Whiskey.
And you just released a special edition to celebrate your 15th anniversary. Tell me about that one.
That's correct. I decided to call it John Cahill Small Batch Whiskey under the 40 Creek label. Every now and then when I taste these barrels, I come across a barrel that is just way over the top, simply outstanding. I take a piece of chalk and I write on it, it says, "Reserved for John." And I'd roll the barrel aside. Well, I've been doing that for 15 years, and all of a sudden I've got these 15 barrels that I can't drink them all. So I decided to celebrate my 15th year anniversary by bottling these barrels off. It made 6,000 bottles of whiskey. It's superb whiskey. It's just won the World Whiskey Awards as the best tasting Canadian, the first Canadian whiskey ever to get a gold medal at Beverage Testing Institute in Chicago.
And you've also got the three grain in the line, but that's only in Canada, correct?
That's correct. Actually, three grain whiskey, 40 Creek three grain whiskey, is only available at the distillery. It uses a lot more malted barley in it, and it's quite different from a barley-based Scotch whiskey, single malt Scotch. Has similar taste characteristics, but without the peat. So, because I don't do any drying of the grains with peat. It's a very pleasant, a very rewarding tasting whiskey, just one with a completely different palate.
And I should note that you've kept on making wine along the same time, too, right? Along with a lot of other interesting things.
Oh, definitely, because, you know, I had to wait 10 long years when I first started making the whiskey in 92. I sold my first bottle in 2002, 10 years later. Well, I couldn't just sit around for those 10 years, so I continued to make wines, and I still continue today because it's still a passion. It's all part of that creative palette of painting on the canvases. I call it painting on the canvases, but sometimes I'm jealous of painters because if they paint on a canvas and they don't like it, they can buy a new canvas. But with wines and spirits, you can't do that. You have to live with what you've done.
And you've tried some things like fortified brandies and ice wines that are somewhat unique as well.
Yes, I have a very unique fortified wine. I make ice wines, and one day I decided to blend my ice wine with one of my brandies. It was a 7-year-old barrel-aged brandy. I mixed them together, and I ended up calling it Kittling Ridge Ice Wine and Brandy. It's very unique. I'm the only winery in the world that makes it. It's won over 25 international tasting awards. It cuts the sweetness of the ice wine in half and brings out some wonderful brandy flavors, but without the alcohol. So it's only at 17% alcohol. It makes a delicious dessert wine.
I have to ask, have you ever tried putting any of your whiskey in the ice wine barrels just to see what would happen?
I haven't done that yet, but I think that might just be a great idea, and I should try it. My ice wines aren't aged and aren't barrel-aged, so what I will have to do is age some ice wine in barrels and then see what happens with that.
What do you want your legacy to be as a distiller?
I think as a distiller, I think my legacy is that truly I'm the first Canadian to produce a handcrafted Canadian whiskey. I think that's, I love making wines, and you have to have patience to be a winemaker, but you have to have more patience to be a whiskey maker. Truly, I think from a legacy standpoint, I think my legacy will be the beginning of the making of handcrafted Canadian whiskies. You see, as a winemaker, I can have a wine out in 2 years. But as a whiskey maker, I had to wait 10 years before I could introduce and sell 40 Creek whiskey because it had to age for 10 years. That takes a lot of patience and a lot of passion. So I think that's where the legacy will be. You know, I still have lots of whiskeys aging away, and some of them are coming along really nicely. I'm experimenting with some port barrels. I like this idea of experimenting with an ice wine barrel. And, you know, a lot of these whiskeys right now, it takes a lot of time to develop. And I'm developing some varietal whiskeys. But right now, they're just a glimmer in my eye. But someday, I hope there'll be a glimmer in your glass.
You'll find a link to the Kittling Ridge website at the WhiskeyCast website. The distillery's store is open year-round, but tours are only available during the spring and summer. Finally, this episode marks the second anniversary of WhiskeyCast. 2 years ago this weekend, episode number 1 went online. Believe it or not, new listeners are still downloading that first show. It's been a lot of fun, and I hope you've enjoyed the past 2 years as much as I have. We still haven't run out of things to talk about yet. Thanks for all of your support, and be sure to tell a friend about the show, or post your comments on the WhiskeyCast page of the iTunes Music Store, or your favorite podcast directory. My email address for questions and suggestions is comments@whiskeycast.com, and I'd love to hear from you. WhiskeyCast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2007, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.